Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello one and all, and welcome to Behind the Glass, your weekly automotive podcast hosted by two rather uninformed enthusiasts.
Nah.
I'm Sam from the YouTube channel Seen Through Glass.
Oh, I'm Tony from Gravelwood Car Sales.
And you can watch us each week on YouTube. You can also listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and most podcast players. We hope you enjoy the episode.
I was just saying, off air for our live recording session viewers over on the Recast page, that, well, I woke up at 4:30 this morning, but I loved the fact that I woke up at 4:30.
Well, it looks like you woke up at 4:30 this morning.
Yes, I loved it at 4:30. It's now just after 1 o'clock.
Yeah.
Starting to hit me a little bit.
Yeah, you've hit a wall.
Well, not a wall, but I'm definitely downhill.
Right.
You know, I'm in neutral fuel economy mode. Just cruising towards what's going to be an early death at about 4 p.m, I think. So I cracked open the caffeine.
What you need to do, mate, is get yourself a little bed up there and have a little nap before you go home. Like a little cheat nap. You know what I mean?
I'm surprised you're saying that because, I mean, it's a brilliant idea.
I mean, I'd never do it, but you're not half the man I am. So I'm just trying to help me, mate.
If my wife found out I'd got a bed at the office and I was saying, babe, I have got so much on. I must go. And then she came around and there was a bed. I would not be alive to tell the tale. But also, like, you give me and Paul and anyone within our group a hard enough time for not working nearly as hard as you do.
Yeah.
And the fact that you have suggested having a secret bed at your workplace that you can have a nap on has shocked me. I didn't think that would even enter your conscience, that idea.
No, I was just looking out for my mates to feel sorry for you.
Do you secretly have naps in between sales?
Never.
If it's a quiet day at the showroom, you're just
never.
Like, oh, I have a little lie down.
I can't do it. I can only sleep like in the dark. Like, or a really dark room. I'm like a bat. Oh, no, they're the other way around, aren't they? They sleep in the day.
They sleep in the day.
Yeah.
Come alive,
so I'm the opposite to a bat.
Can you sleep on a plane?
You know I can't.
I do know you can't. Can you sleep in a car?
You know I can't.
Well, I don't know you can't. Like,
I spent 4 days, mind you, it wasn't your
flat
360.
Out, flat out, man.
Well, flat out, 40 mile an hour.
Well, it's fast flat car.
Yeah.
I can definitely... So I don't like napping. I really don't like napping.
No.
But I can if it's required. And I found with a baby, it is required every now and again. Anyway, we've literally spent 5 minutes talking about sleep, which is not what this podcast is about.
No.
If you're new to Behind the Glass, welcome. This is an automotive podcast some of the time. Definitely not all the time, but some of the time. You can enjoy us on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/behindtheglass. You can listen audio only on most podcast players. We just activated Amazon Music. Some of our listeners are employees at Amazon Music and sent a note to our podcast publisher saying, why is Behind the Glass not on Amazon Music? Tell them to get their act together. So thank you for letting
us
know.
We're on there as well.
We're on there now. And as I mentioned right at the start, if you want to join us for live recording sessions and early access to episodes and bonus content like After the Chicken Flag that I do with Paul, and additional bits of snippets that we do, head over to Recast, recast.tv/behindtheglass. Lots of car news to catch up on quickly today before we get into our main topic, which is going to be the Ferrari Puro Sangue. My video went live on the main channel at the weekend. We teased the fact last week we were going to talk about it, and we're going to get into it this week because, well, there was a lot of... Is conjecture the right word?
No idea.
I'm going to go with conjecture about the car. When the embargo lifted and everyone's content came out, I saw a lot of people just going, let's discuss. So we're going to get into it. Quickly, just a shout out to some of our live viewers, Marlon, Karen, Brandon Taylor 9, Timothy Schroll, who says, no one works harder than Tony. I thought everyone knew that. Good point, Timothy. And Kevin as well. So
that is actually a lie, but I really appreciate your support.
Now, I want to start with a clip that was going viral on social media over the weekend, I think, or at least the last couple of days. Did you see
what,
the
me?
Citroën Amy? Am I?
Oh, yeah, reposted
in Monaco.
Yeah. Yeah, I reposted it and said, are you all right, Paul?
Because it's the kind of thing that Paul Wallace would do.
Yeah, he'd just go piling in, wouldn't he? Yeah, go straight.
But no, but so how many clips did you see of this? Just the one?
No, I probably see more than one. There was one which was a shorter clip of it literally hitting the... I mean, if them barriers not there to kill someone, by the way.
Yep.
There was people literally there.
Legit.
Mind you, would it have killed someone? Because it weighs about as much as a pram.
No. It weighs a lot more than a pram. It would have flattened someone.
Yeah. So I saw the longer one where he went up and come back down and then rolled. And then I saw a smaller clip where he just come down from the back, basically. That's all I saw.
I'm assuming the driver was male. Have we seen that clip? Let's say he.
Let's hope he's all right, first of all.
Let's hope he's all right. It looked from the footage like everyone outside the vehicle was all right. They all managed to get out of the way.
Yeah.
But it definitely looked like he was... I don't think he was trying to roll it. It definitely looked like he was trying to cock a wheel, didn't he? He was going up and down as fast as he could. And I think he thought, I could get a bit of lean on here. Because there were so many people filming it that... I know, for example, if you go to Monaco on that hairpin, the iconic hairpin from the Grand Prix circuit, lots of people do just sit on the wall there and watch the cars go by.
They wait for supercars.
Yeah, they wait for supercars, but yeah. Even just tourists, just general tourists. So it's not unthought of that random members of the public could be sitting there and filming it. But the reason I think they were filming it is I reckon he was going up and down a number of times, faster and faster, wheels screeching, and he thought, I'll be able to get this up on two wheels. It will look hilarious. And then he just went over.
Well, he did get it up on two wheels. So I'll tell you what I think happened. I think... he's an absolute moron, first of all. And I think he's gone up flat out because you can go uphill flat out. And he does 35 mile an hour, that thing. So he probably thought, well, I can go up flat out, I'll come down flat out. It's doing the same speed. Well, you're not doing the same speed and you're going round a left-hand corner as opposed to going up round a right-hand corner. And it all went terribly wrong.
Terribly wrong. Barry in the live chat saying that there's even a point of view angle, which is outrageous.
That is outrageous.
So yeah, it definitely was planned, but I don't think it was planned to roll over. And you're right. Thank God for the barriers, because the car flips and just smashes into... They're quite like spaced out posts.
Yeah.
And there's some people sitting behind it that managed to clear out the way. But there's a one clip which makes it look fairly dramatic, like quite terrifyingly dramatic. But I mean, just silly.
But I knew he was going to crash as he come down the hill.
Okay,
I knew he was going way too far. As I looked down, before even knowing it was going to do that, I thought that is way too far.
So, do you remember that's that just going to go straight. Steve Sutcliffe clip when he was in with... who was the Jaguar driver? Yeah, the F1. Antonio Pizzonia, I think it was.
He knew he was just going too fast.
Yeah, Catalunya, hurling into the first corner. Sutcliffe just goes... Nope. We're not making this corner.
Yeah.
You had the same moment with that
And I had that similar moment when I was in your Ferrari that time. Do you remember?
Oh, yeah.
Because I said to you, mate, that's too fast.
Yeah. Because we were on the Mille Miglia.
Yeah. And I just thought you were going too fast.
Were we chasing the yellow F8 at the time?
Yeah, he was literally, he might as well have been in reverse.
I think he was in cruise control.
Yeah, literally.
And I was giving it 11 tenths. Be like, wait, I'm going to have him.
Yeah.
I'm going
to
have him.
But that wasn't down to your bad driving or good driving, because I happen to think you're a good driver, but I was looking down and I looked up and then all of a sudden the corner was there. That's why I flapped. So mate, you're going far too fast.
Yeah.
Then.
You didn't think the car was capable.
Yeah.
You had underestimated the abilities of a 360.
It was because I was looking down. I must have been looking at that stupid map that you give me. And then I looked up and then there's a corner. my brain couldn't.
Yeah, you freaked out.
I did actually freak out.
It was the one and only moment on all of Mille Miglia where you genuinely lost your poo.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're like, we're going to die now.
Yeah.
But that fantastic car and its great handling got us around that corner at high speed. anyway, as you say, hopefully everyone in the Citroën Instant was all right. I mean, it's such a silly car that, and if you go to Monaco, cars like that, like the Twizy, it's what people do, because it's just like the 17-year-olds who are bored and have got these little things, and they just fly around everywhere just trying to basically get it up onto its side.
Because I think it only does 40 or 50 miles on a charge as well. I
mean, it's a little tiny city.
Useless.
Thing. I'd actually have a Twizy instead, but anyway. Moving on. So yeah, car news, aside from viral clips on Instagram and TikTok, Porsche have announced another rise in prices.
They all have.
So, well, I think you mentioned this. Who was it? Ferrari said have also bumped up their prices?
In January they did, but most manufacturers from the turn of the year put all their prices up on their cars.
Porsche apparently are claiming it's to maintain a healthy profit. Which I kind of applaud.
Well, at least they're honest.
At least they're super honest, because apparently in 2022 they had great profits. So, well, we've got to maintain that. So let's up our prices.
Yeah.
But it's been happening a lot, hasn't it, over the last couple of years, especially with the part supply issues and things like that. We've seen prices go up from GT3 from the moment it launched at 121 grand for the 992 generation. I think by the time I bought mine, it was like 130 something. Mm. So they've been flying up.
Yeah.
Now, talking about Porsche and prices, you have a little story to tell about a Turbo S, don't you?
Oh, mate. I mean, it is a story and nothing surprises me now in the motor trade. But most of you know I've got a Turbo S. I bought it in the trade. So from a dealer, I didn't buy it direct from the customer. It was new. It done 50 miles. But I didn't buy it direct from the customer who the Porsche dealer supplied. I get a call...
Can I ask one quick question?
Of course.
The trade person you bought it from, was that a Porsche dealer or you bought it from an independent?
No, it was an independent dealer.
Okay.
Yeah. He had bought it from the customer, obviously. So the customer took delivery of it. He's had overs for it. Then...
So could we say the customer has flipped the Turbo S?
100% he has, yeah. Okay. He's literally drove it out of his local Porsche dealer and driven it up the road and got his money and a drink on top.
Fair play.
But that's up to him. No, that's no problem.
Not what I would do. I'd drive the car, but fair play.
That's up to him. Anyway, so I bought it from the dealer. Last week, I get a call from the man who bought the car.
The original Turbo customer.
The original customer who had the car for 25 minutes. Said, I've seen that you're advertising my old car. I said, right. He said, Porsche are giving me a bit of a hard time. Can you take it down and re-photograph it and block the number plates out? I said, no. What are you talking about?
What?
I said, my word, you can imagine what my words were. I don't imagine
you were that polite.
not to the man, but I said to him, tell Porsche to F off.
Yeah.
As in, you've sold the car, whether you should have sold the car or not, I have an opinion about it. Once you've parted with your money, you should be able to do what you like with your car, regardless of what they say. Because what's good for them is good for everyone else. As in, it's okay for them to have delivery mile GT3s and delivery mile Turbo S's advertised at well over list. But it's not all right for the customer to flip it to earn a little profit or a big profit or whatever they decide. And then an independent dealer to advertise it. That's not allowed.
Well, what I think is, there's so many sort of parts of that story, which I'm just like, what?
I know.
So firstly, that Porsche, as you say, have called their customer.
Given him grief.
And said, it's not on. You know, you didn't tell us you were going to flip the car, you blah, blah, blah. We're really unimpressed. Could you at least hide the plate so that Porsche retail don't find out or something?
This is a Turbo S, by the way. I mean, there's 75 of them for sale. It's not as though there's only two.
Makes
can't
no sense.
Get them. Yeah.
But then the fact that the customer has called you, who he didn't even... Did you know this person?
Never met him in my life.
So they cold called you and said, can you please take the pictures down? Which is absolutely insane. It's like
I'm getting some grief from Porsche because the car's advertised.
My Abarth, the 695 Piposto record, the yellow one, went up for sale a few months ago. It was doing the rounds and loads of people were sending me pictures on Instagram. It's like, oh, your Piposto record's for sale. Imagine if I'd written to the dealer and said, oh, can you remove the plates? People keep tagging me.
Yeah.
I don't want the grief. I'd be like, who are you, mate?
He wanted me to blur the plate or remove the photos and retake it with my gravel wood to get the plate off.
Because the thing is, like, I understand that the bad guys here are Porsche for giving him crap, right? Like, you
it's
know.
None of their business, yeah.
None of their business. They've sold the car. They got the money. Like, sorry.
Yeah.
Deal's done. Like, you may regret that. And you think, okay, well, we're not going to sell him another car because he's a flipper and he didn't give it back to us. But to put enough pressure on him, because he's only calling you because he's genuinely feeling the pressure. Do you know what I mean?
Because of a few, probably future relationship, as in he probably wants other cars, and now they might now they might not give him a special car because he's flipped the Turbo S. I would have guessed that that's probably why he's flapping.
But that's the thing, is anyone in a normal state of mind would have just gone, well, that's an unreasonable thing to ask someone that I don't know. So, sorry, Porsche. No, like,
tough.
The car's gone. Like, yeah, I sold it. Sorry. But I guess it's further proof of some Porsche centres kind of using, well, I don't know, what would you call it? Suspicious tactics or just going about things the wrong way, right?
I have absolutely no problem with people flipping cars or even Porsche trying to protect their brand, right? They are trying to protect their brand, and I completely get that. But do you know what, Porsche? Tell all your dealers to take all the cars down that are all at loads over list, that are at delivery miles, that it's okay for them to sell it, but yeah, when a customer does it, that's not allowed. I mean, it's bang out of order. And actually, do you know what? I've heard so many stories over the last couple of years. I'm actually starting to resent the brand.
Really?
Honestly, mate, I love the cars. It's one of my... They were with Ferrari, my favourite brand for years. But just over these last few years, and what I've experienced as a human being over the last few years with having a relationship with Porsche, my love for the brand, not the product, the brand is slowly dying.
Wow.
Because it's just wrong how they treat some people.
Well, and that's the thing, you always hear negativity online, right? People don't jump online to sing praises about things because they're just happy in life and getting on with it. So people always jump to complain. But yeah, the amount of stories that have come through over the last couple of years of people being done wrong by Porsche dealers.
Yeah.
And mistreated or taken down, what's it called? Taken down the country path. What's it called? What's
that? Yeah. Taken down a blind alley.
Thank you. Yeah. I've had an amazing experience, but I've been very lucky, I suppose. Yeah.
But I did as well. In recent times. And by the way, I'm not tarnishing all the Porsche dealers with the same stick, by the way, because I do genuinely know some really good ones that really try to be fair. And actually, from that point of view, it's the customers that stiff them up, that stiff the Porsche dealers up. But I think I think they've become very arrogant because they've got such a popular product now. I think a lot of them have become very arrogant in the way they behave. I'm not going to sit here and tell you all the stories, but mate, I've got so many stories tell. I can't be bothered to go through.
Yeah, well, it's a whole other episode.
Who cares?
Let's move on, because I thought, quite interestingly, Volkswagen have come out and confirmed that their new ID1 electric vehicle is going to be 17 grand as an entry level EV. And I didn't even know what that was. So obviously we've had the ID3 and the ID4, right? So this is still yet to be unveiled, but it's the upcoming ID1.
So is that an up or a Polo, that sort of size?
Yeah, that's what they're saying. It's saying it's a similar size to the Polo, and this is their entry level EV, and it's 17 grand. I'm like, finally, a relatively sensibly priced EV from a mainstream manufacturer.
Well, 17 grand is level with a combustion car. I mean, that's what a GTI up would be, or even a Polo is probably more than 17 grand new.
I'm sure. Yeah. I mean, we are yet to, I think, find out stats and things like that. This will go, but it's like, it does 25 miles.
17 grand, but you got to buy the batteries after.
Yeah, exactly. We could be slightly undone here, but you know, one of our big red flags or big issues with electric vehicles is their price to purchase. Mm. And I think if we start seeing big manufacturers do this and introduce more entry-level EVs, it's going to help a lot in terms of adopting electric cars into the mainstream. So I'm going to keep a close eye on this. I'm intrigued. 17 grand ID1. So my concern is it will come out with really tiny mileage, long charging times to try and encourage you to spend more and go up to the bigger ones. But, you know, people are going to have to start somewhere with these electric cars. And yep. I think that ID3 and 4 are really good.
Yeah.
I think the 3 is supposed to be another good sort of semi-entry-level one.
I actually think a lot of electric cars are quite good looking.
Yeah.
Full stop.
Styling-wise.
Yeah.
I think that's one thing they're doing really well, is giving them that futuristic vibe.
Yeah.
One thing which I've noticed, though, which is definitely a marketing thing, what's gone away are the sporty EVs. You noticed that?
I haven't noticed it, but I'm not surprised. And we had this conversation before, remember the above conversation? Mm-hmm. So, and I get it. I understand why maybe long term it's probably not the route to go. And if you go back to the previous podcast that we recorded last week and spoke about synthetic fuels, you'd half understand why maybe in future they're looking in that direction. It makes complete sense to me.
Well, yeah. So, you know, Petrohead's always going to be the hardest group to convince to switch to electric, and also the hardest sector within the market to create a really sporty, emotive EV is difficult.
Oh, it's a very small percentage of the market as well, by the way.
Well, there we go. So realistically, most people, and we see the biggest benefit for electric vehicles are those who are using it on a daily commutable basis, and therefore you don't need sports cars. But yeah, we're getting a lot of these kind of hatchbacks, SUVs, big chunky things.
Yeah.
But you're right, they're good looking. I saw, we spoke about it before, the Ioniq 6 when I was on that trip down to Switzerland a few weeks ago. I love the way that looks. It's really weird, really like slinky, slurky, but they look futuristic, which I think is half the battle.
Yeah. We literally just sold an Ioniq 5, which I think is a fabulous looking car and actually quite a good car for an electric car. And we had an A35 in stock, and I never realised the difference in size until you put them both. I mean,
huge.
Mate, it's like a Q5.
Yeah, it's ginormous.
It's massive. Yeah. I mean, it made the A35 look like an old mini. Yeah, like literally. Yeah,
it's so hard because in photos it looks great and it looks size-wise, it makes sense. When you see them, they're just ginormous.
Huge.
But that's why the Ioniq 6 is a lot sleeker, a lot smaller, fair. A lot sleeker. Away from EVs and back to combustion engines, BMW said that they're slashing their UK diesel offering as demand dips. Now, this made me panic slightly because I own a diesel X3. But then I also thought, well, that makes it increasingly
rare. Here we go.
Increases the value, Tony.
That's what he thinks.
One of the last diesels in the UK. Buy it now.
The last.
For $5,000 premium. Does this surprise you?
No.
Do you see a decreased interest in diesels at Gravelwood?
It's hard for me to tell because the only diesels I really sell are SUVs.
Okay.
And big SUVs, and I think they will still stay diesel. Although, when you look at Land Rover now and BMW, their X5s now, they're 3-litre petrol with hybrid technology. So, or even 2-litre petrols with hybrid technology. So, the thing is, mate, diesel is really expensive to buy. Now,
yeah.
It's like
30 or 40p a litre more.
No, about 20. 18, 20p a litre.
I've been going to the wrong petrol stations.
Well, you would be because you live in London.
Central London.
Or Surrey.
Sloane Square. Moving on.
Yeah. So, say 20p a litre, 18 to 20p a litre. So, but if you've got an efficient petrol car, like a 2-litre petrol car, we spoke about this millions of times, unless you're doing loads of miles, there's no benefit. So,
yeah, I mean, it's a hard one. Ever since I went to the 40D for the X3, I've missed the engine in the 40i. I've definitely appreciated the increased fuel economy, but could I have got the similar fuel economy if I'd got an X3 30? You know what? You know, if I hadn't got the big equivalent. So, my point being, yes, I can understand why diesels are losing interest and I don't know. I still, as a daily commuter car, I think I would lean towards that or a hybrid.
Well, if you're... What, a diesel?
Diesel or a hybrid.
But if you're doing a lot of miles.
Yes, which I... Yeah.
Yeah, if you're not doing loads and loads and loads of miles, then you might as well have the petrol equivalent because it's cheaper to buy. The actual vehicle's cheaper to buy and it's cheaper to run because of the price difference in fuel.
Bear with me as I go down a bit of a niche segue here.
Really?
Yeah.
Sound like you.
So at the weekend I went to check out M3 Touring.
Great car.
We can talk more about it because at some point I'm getting a loan to do proper content with. And the first thing that blew me away looking at it is how much more space it has than my X3. This is mind-boggling. Mm. I literally almost went to get a tape measure. I even messaged Joe Achilles about it, resident BMW expert. Because, obviously, X3, M3, or 3 Series Touring, it's supposed to be basically the same, right?
Jacked up, yeah.
And you would expect the X3, the SUV form, to have more space. But the ultimate test is the pram, which obviously I took with me to test out.
As you would.
As you would.
Did you take the baby or just took the pram?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And the baby as well.
People might think bad things of you and just run around.
Left the baby on the pavement, took the pram in. Now, so at the moment, we have a bassinet, which is like the carry cot section, and then the foldable base. In the X3, with the base and the bassinet next to each other in the boot, that is the boot done. Everything else you have to pile on top, and you run out of space fairly quickly. When Vicky's mum came to stay the other week when I was away, we had to pick up from the airport, we had the baby. I was like, well, look, this is a disaster. On top of that, with the baby seat and the ISOFIX, the front passenger seat has to be right in the dash. The M3 Touring, which I assume is exactly the same for the standard 3 Series Touring, oh my God, the boot, it's cavernous. Like, weirdly,
But it'll be deep, it won't be high.
Yeah, fine.
So the cubic size will be smaller. Don't forget it's higher.
Yes, but then basically cubic size is BS. Because if you're a good Tetris player, it's just about how you can fit stuff in and having the depth, just changed the game.
But to be fair, mate, if you need more room in a bigger state car or even an X3, you're taking too much stuff.
No, hold on. Because it's not just the boot. Firstly, prams are just clunky things. Get rid of the pram. I've never had an issue with our car until we had a bloody baby. I'm joking. I love my daughter. But she comes with a lot of paraphernalia.
Of course.
So until we had the pram, I never complained. But baby paraphernalia, but it's not just the boot. Because I can move past the boot, like, fine. Like, but it's the internal cabin size. Because as I say, with the M3, with the ISOFIX in the car seat, I could sit in the front passenger seat with loads of space. In the X3, you can't do it. I'm in the dash, I can't fit in the seat. So I don't understand it, but 3 Series Touring, way more practical than X3.
But I had exactly the same conversation with Paul the other day, two different cars, the RS6 and the Q8. Because I've got them both in stock.
Okay.
And the RS6 has got more room inside.
There we go. Yeah. There we go.
Because it's a bigger state car.
Yeah. It's honestly, why are we all buying SUVs? But it did make me genuinely reconsider
it's lifestyle vehicles. It's trendy.
And
so everyone does.
The reason I went to the Segway was, as I started looking, going, right, well, get rid of the X3. Let's just get a 340.
Get rid of the X.
Get a 340D Touring.
Just leave it here.
Or an M3 Touring, if I can really convince Vicky. Let's wait for the loan.
I've got one coming.
I know you do.
Yo, you can have that.
Well, let's wait and see. I've got to convince Vicky of the...
I'll give you good money for your car. I'll look after you on the M3. Done it.
Don't get so excited.
Yeah, no, come on.
My point being, I was then also thinking, well, what about a 330e, the hybrid?
That's boring.
Eh, but it's basically Vicky's car. Like, it's a car that's just used for shipping stuff around.
You'd be fuming with a 330e.
But you lose boot space because you've got all the bloody battery gubbins.
Of course, yeah.
So I was like, well then, all the reason I'm doing the change, the practical, just lost.
An M3 would actually be perfect for you.
An M3 would actually be pretty dreamy.
Generally.
But you say this, I got to wait until I have the true experience. But my initial thought is the problem with my lifestyle with an M3 Touring is I'm going to want to drive that car the majority of the time.
Well, you can't.
What's Vicky going to drive?
But you've got 3 other cars, mate. Don't be greedy.
I know, but that's the point. Like,
let her drive that.
It's better off leaving her to do her thing in an X3 or an M340D Touring or whatever, and then I can just focus, go back onto my initial charge of 4-seater sports car.
Oh, I've cracked it.
Go on.
You keep the X3, get rid of the Jag and have an M3 Touring. Then
what's
then
the point? You can't have an X3 and an M3 Touring.
Of course you can. You're going to drive it more than her. Sorry, her, Vicky.
Anyway, just quickly checking in. A few messages on the chat. Timothy, what are you saying here? Does the MPG gain of diesel offset the price difference? That's my argument, but
depends
I'm not...
Depends how many miles you do.
Yeah, that's what I think. But if I actually sat down with a calculator, Timothy, I'm not so sure. I couldn't really work it out. And then Jacob just jumped from diesel to petrol. My fuel bill has decreased by a third and get the same MPG. I guess it slightly depends on on the engine and what car and stuff.
Yeah.
And then Barry's has gone back to the Porsche chat and said a delivery mileage Macan GTS at dealers around 99k at the moment, 15-20k over list, which is fairly insane. Anyway, talking about cars over list, I think there is one car we can guarantee is going to sell over list. And actually, I'd love
if there were, because hold on a minute, I know what you're going to say. Carry on, actually. No, carry on.
One car that we can guarantee is going to sell over list, and I would love us to try and guess and estimate just how insane we think immediate resale values of this car is going to be. It's the main topic for today, the Pure de Sangue.
Yeah. Now, before I rudely jumped in, the dealers or Ferrari are getting people to sign waivers that they can't sell the car out of the network within the first 18 months.
No, doesn't surprise me.
So the car has to go back to the network. There'll be some that end up at Romans or someone won't care. And
oh yeah.
There will be overs.
Can we revisit that towards the end? Because we need to discuss the difference between that and Porsche and why that seems less of a bad thing or less of a surprise from Ferrari and what the differences are. Can we come back to that after we get into the car?
Yeah, I can tell you why, but go on.
Because also there's something that I want to talk about before that, about that.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
At the Pure de Sangue about who's going to be buying it, how, like, etc.
Good.
So,
do you know who's going to be buying it?
I want to talk about who Ferrari pretend is going to be buying it.
It's and
who's
so funny. This conversation is going to be hilarious.
So I think we've got to launch straight into the big elephant in the room when it comes to the Pure de Sangue. Is or isn't it an SUV?
I genuinely do think it is. I know you're probably going to say it's not. But you've been brainwashed. You've been to a Ferrari.
Wouldn't be the
event.
First time.
You've been massaged. You've been cuddled. You've had vol-au-vents. You've had nice coffee in Italy. And they have literally brainwashed you into it not being an SUV. The reason why they haven't called it an SUV is because they're embarrassed that it is an SUV. They just don't want to admit that it's an SUV. And the reason why I think it's an SUV is because it's sporty. It's utility and it's a vehicle. So that basically does sum up the Pure de Sangue, what it is. Yeah, it might be a bit smaller than some of them, but I'll tell you another thing as well. Everyone that buys that car, I bet they'll be coming out their SUV to go in it. They won't be coming out their car.
Okay, so here's a few things. I'll question the utility part quite massively.
Right.
Secondly, all those people that are coming out of Uruses, DBXs, I think they're going to be disappointed and confused.
Oh, they will be.
And I think a lot of people have misunderstood this car and queried this car because of, and we're partly to blame here, because of for the last 18 months or 2 years, we've been saying, oh, Ferrari going to make an SUV. Can you believe it? The Ferrari SUV is coming. Even when the embargo lifted and all the reviews came out, 75% of reviews had a title saying Ferrari's SUV.
Yeah.
Now, you've taken the literal meaning for SUV, sports utility vehicle.
Yeah.
And gone, that's what it is. It's a sports utility vehicle.
Yeah.
But if we step away from the exact, it's like when we used to call things 4x4s, you know, and they weren't always actually 4x4s.
Mm.
A Hoover's not always a Hoover. That's just the brand. Anyway, so I'm getting lost. We consider SUVs big 4x4 GP, Uruses, DBXs, Range Rovers. So you get what I'm saying, right?
It's all of them.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, exactly. It's hard to write down because it covers such a broad range now, but think of an SUV as a Range Rover, a Urus, a DBX, a Porsche Cayenne. That's what we're going to reference. And when I say SUV, that's what I'm discussing.
So you're ruling out Q5, Tiguan, Qashqai.
Fine, I call those the smaller SUVs. Yeah, absolutely.
All SUVs.
Yeah, and then you have mini SUV, Q3s and things like that.
Yeah, yeah.
So the thing about the Pura Sangue to, I think, understand initially is this is not an entirely new thing for Ferrari. This is essentially an evolution of the Lusso.
What's the official name for it? Do you know?
Pura Sangue.
No. What
the code name, the internal code name.
What have they described the car as in what is it? What have they said?
It's a 2+2.
That's it?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's the next iteration in Ferrari's 2+2. The first ever four-door car from Ferrari.
Okay, do you know what? So I had done a bit of digging because I knew this was coming. I knew what you was going to say. So I have actually done a little bit of homework.
Please.
It is a luxury four-seat, four-door vehicle.
Okay.
That is the actual terminology.
That's their official terminology.
Correct. Fine. That is what they're going to, that is what they'll sell the car as.
Fine. Well, and to me, that makes sense. So Ferrari, 2+2 cars for them, so four-seat cars. It's insanely long lineage. I mean, it's what Enzo used to drive from the factory. He used to always pick the 2+2s. And as I say, this is, read between the BS, an evolution of the Lusso. It has just gained two extra doors and a bit of ride height.
And $100,000 in price.
We'll come back to that.
At least.
It is not a completely new architecture from Ferrari. There is some insanely clever suspension. That is true. But get behind the wheel, it feels familiar. It is not like a Lamborghini customer getting behind the wheel of a Urus for the first time.
Right.
So moving from that point, so once we understood where the concept comes from, where it began its life, there's a few things that you need to look at that would be found usually in its competitors or in other SUVs that I think would make it more of an SUV. Firstly, it is really not that far off the ground. So much so, it requires lift.
Right.
As standard, it comes with a very small lift. You can option an additional lift. But that is how low it is. Like, there will be, okay, not speed bumps, but there'll be some driveway, some elements that it will struggle to get up. So it is not that high off the ground.
But I can lift my RS6, by the way.
Fine. Yeah, of course, because air suspension and things like that. Yeah. But what I'm saying is, that's actually a brilliant example, because it's not the height that you said RS6, you didn't say RSQ8.
No, well, you can lift that if it's got air suspension as well.
Of course, but you're less needed, you're less required
Correct.
To.
Yeah.
So it's not that high off the ground. There is absolutely no off-road mode, loose surface mode.
There isn't in a Qashqai. There isn't in a Tiguan. There isn't in a Q5. But
in terms of what people are claiming the Pura Sangue's competitors are, DBX, DBX does, Urus does, Cayenne doesn't. Range Rover does.
I don't think it has a competitor.
It definitely doesn't. This is the whole point. It doesn't.
Yeah.
But a lot of sportier SUVs, or at least where you could position it, what other brands are doing, they do have some kind of off-road mode. No towing capability. The boot is medium-ish. No roof rack, no roof rails available. So its utility abilities are actually quite lacking. It is just gained the two additional doors at the back.
But a lot of SUVs, for people's audio, I'm wiggling my fingers.
Yep.
A lot of SUVs come under that same bracket. They're called SUVs, but then they don't actually fit the full criteria.
Yeah, because there's so many vehicles that now fit in this weird...
But that's
column.
The manufacturer, you see, because it's just... Basically, what it is, mate, and we're going to come back to it. It's an excuse for a manufacturer to hike the price up of a car in general. Ferrari don't need to do it because they're Ferrari, and again, we'll talk about this after. But in general, a manufacturer will call something an SUV because they can ask more money for it.
Yeah, okay.
That's what it's all about.
What would you call an A6 all road?
A car.
That is what the Pura Sangue is. It is so much closer to an RS6 all-road than an RSQ8.
Well, that's worse.
It may be.
It's worse than.
But it's a Ferrari.
It's an expensive car then. Just a car.
Yes.
I mean that, well, but it's a piss take then.
But you know, okay, just you have to involve the price in the conversation. but you know, as a Ferrari, it's fantastic.
It's like it's genius.
The most impressive thing about the Purosangue is that considering it is an RS6 all road or a Panamera Sport Turismo,
it's an expensive Cross Turismo. Car.
Yeah, it's a slightly lifted estate car.
Expensive
and if they had started off saying, boys and girls, we're making a Ferrari estate car, it could have made a little bit more sense, a tiny bit more sense.
But no one would have bought it.
No one would have bought it because everyone wants to buy, yes, as you say, SUVs. But that is, it is way, way closer in that argument. And therefore, when you drive it, the fact that it's a true Ferrari, it feels like a Lusso, but actually it's bigger, it's heavier, it's got four doors, it's got massage seats, it's got all these different things, but still performs like a Ferrari is why it's so impressive.
Yeah.
But then as you say, you come on to the big, big issue, the price. So specced up, this is a 400 grand car.
Easily.
It's quite hard not to get to 400 grand. You've got to actively avoid some options like internal carbon fiber. I think it's like, is it more than, is it 24 grand or is it 12?
I think the glass roof was 15 grand.
Which, by the way, is pointless, can I just say? So the glass roof has that technology that's supposed to be from the 612 Scaglietti that, you know, turns, it's blue and then you push a button and it goes
like,
light.
Like McLaren do that as well.
But it doesn't work. Right. It was blue or dark blue. It never went clear. Right. So I was like, this is pointless. And you sit in the driver's seat, you don't even know it's behind you. So I'm sorry, if you're getting a Purosangue, which some of our listeners will be, don't spec the glass roof. Totally pointless.
Do not listen to him.
No, it's totally, mate, it's pointless. But totally pointless.
It might be
pointless. Get the carbon fibre roof, it's lighter.
Right, it might be pointless, but you... I would have.
Because you're specking it like an SUV. Wrong.
Because that is what I think it is. Whether it's wrong or right, and the general public will perceive it to be an SUV because of, they are going to be disappointed, by the way, you are right. But the general consensus with that car, one, because of the price, because of how much, it's like eye-watering how much it is. And the fact that you said it is basically a jacked up RS6 is even more eye-watering, is the people coming out of it and they're going to be disappointed. They're going to go in it and go, flipping, I should have kept my Range Rover. Or what I should have kept my Range Rover. And if I wanted to go a little bit faster, I should have bought a Pista and I could have had a Pista and a Range Rover for the same money as this poxy thing I've just bought.
Would you have a panoramic roof on your Pista?
No, because it's not a Pista, mate.
But the pan roof, so the Purosangue... You are adding weight at the top of the car with your pan roof.
Tell you another
that
thing.
That is pointless.
I'll tell you another thing. I wouldn't have an RS6 without a pan roof either.
Okay, so...
Because it would be stupid.
But the thing is, this is the worst pan roof I've ever experienced in my
life. But fair
enough. It's not a pan, it was so dark, I never knew it was a pan roof. I had to ask Tim's girlfriend... Poopy, who was in the back,
Poopy.
I was like, is there a pan roof? Because I think it's not. I think this is the carbon fiber roof. It's so dark.
Right.
It's the biggest waste of money ever. You are not getting any benefit of a pan roof. All you're doing is adding weight. And the thing is, if you're buying a Ferrari Purosangue, apart from the fact that you want everyone to know how insanely rich you are, somewhere inside of you, you've got to think, well, I'm buying it because I want to actually drive. I am conceding actual usability, practicality, etc. I just want a car.
Drive where, mate?
To the Alps.
No chance.
No, 1,000,000%.
To it or around them?
Around them. You do not want to go on a supercar convoy in that car, but you would be very surprised at how good and enjoyable that car is on a proper twisty road because the suspension is so clever that it just eats up the road.
I wouldn't be surprised, and I could absolutely vision how good it probably would be, but it ain't going to be as good as a Pista. No,
mate, of course it's not going to be good. But can you get four people in a Pista?
No. But what I'm trying to say is that for the money it is, it should be as good. You should be able to do everything.
No, don't be stupid.
I'm not being stupid. It's 400 grand, mate. 400 people buy houses for less.
Yeah, but you can't say just because it's 400 grand, it should be able to do everything a Pista can do. It's a two-seat mid-engine supercar.
Yeah.
This is a four-seat, four-door, jacked-up estate car.
But at the weekend, you said it was a supercar.
Well, I said it was a four. I didn't say it was a supercar. I said it's better to think of it as a supercar.
No,
but the estate car argument is the better. It's a super estate. It's definitely a super estate. But the point being is that if you had, it's not a family's a bit punchy. You can have your family, but it's the ultimate friends trip. You know, like
fair. We're gonna but cruising.
No, mate, you can properly get on it in this thing.
Right.
You need to drive it.
Okay,
because. Okay, it's Turbo S. It's that. It's not absolutely set the road alight. I'm doing ultimate track
time. Do you think
it'd
be as fast as Turbo S?
I think it'd be close. I genuinely think it might be close. Raw acceleration, no.
It's 2 ton a bit.
Yeah. But
it's really heavy.
I would say it would be as quick point A to point B. That's what I would say.
Yeah, but hold on a minute, mate. Hold on a minute.
Okay, well, on a hill climb.
Yeah, but I always like, you know, A to B on a road, it's very, very rare you can lose a car on a road unless you're an absolute lunatic. But in general, if you've got a half decent fast car, we've said this so many times before, that actually an M2 or a Golf R, you'd keep up with most cars. Unless you're going absolutely flat out in a supercar, most of the time, most people's capabilities, you'd keep up in every car because you're on the road. We are on the road, aren't we? It's not race track.
Yeah, no, of course. I think what I'm trying to say is that it's that similar thing where take Turbo S versus GT3 or Turbo S versus Pista or whatever. You're not, in the Pura Sangue, you're not getting Pista or even 812 razor sharpness. Think of the Lusso, which was always 80% of Ferraris, or even the FF, which was 75% of the full-blooded stuff. But because of the increased suspension travel, you can just carry the speed. And the brakes, it's got that ABS Evo technology from the 296.
Yeah, great.
Which is accessible in all modes, not just in the race mode. You just carry the speed, mate. That's what it is. And it just gives you constant traction and confidence. So that's why I would say it's a car for all situations. Not necessarily your supercar rally. I wouldn't say take that car on the trip with the lads, but it is just, it's the ultimate usable Ferrari. It's the ultimate usable Ferrari. But at 400K, I completely are with you. If you actually
Because you can have a Turbo S for 200 grand.
Or have a Turbo S and a Urus.
Correct.
Do you know what I mean? Like the point being, do you really need that car in your life that you're prepared to pay that money? Or just go buy a Lusso. Buy a Lusso and a Pista.
Well, yes. Well, this is the uniqueness of Ferrari as a brand. There would be no other brand in the world that would get away with selling this car apart from Ferrari. In terms of price point, in terms of what it is, they'll all be sold.
Oh yeah, sold out.
They're all sold out, as in...
Ferrari won't say that, by the way, so...
No, but they will be, for sure.
Yeah, so the V12 is only going to be, it's a limited production run. There will be another engine going in that car. Ferrari, again, refused to comment on it. People did ask many, many times, but there will be another engine going in that car.
We know what's happening.
But the V12, it's a couple of years of production, basically. It's 20% of that output. So it's like a couple, it's like 2,000 cars a year, or just under 2,000 cars a year. They're all spoken for. I
heard 1,000 cars a year.
Well, it's 20% of the total output.
Oh, was it 20%? Yeah, I heard 10%.
No, 20% of the total output.
Right, okay.
In the official press conference, I said to Ferrari, I said, who do you expect to buy? Do you expect this will bring new customers to the brand, like all other manufacturers launch an SUV with the hope that it's going to bring new people to the brand? And secondly, if I am new to the brand, can I walk into a Ferrari dealership and just buy one of these cars? And they said, yes, absolutely, yes.
No.
Said, of course, the first few cars are offered to our, you know, most loyal customers, but after that, you know, and I said, okay, sure. Yeah. But yeah, they're gone.
No chance.
You just cannot.
Yeah.
But you're right. It's because I think Ferrari now are more than the product that they offer.
Mate, they are. It's why we love the brand and the car and the product so much, because it is absolutely unique and offers something that no other car brand offers. It is, okay, you have got Bugatti, like you said, and but that's really real, real niche stuff, you know. But Ferrari is another level, mate, compared to all these other brands and how they behave and how they operate. And, yeah, sometimes they make you jump through hoops and you have to, but at least you have a clear path of what's going on and where you are. And like I said, when they launch these cars and how they protect their brand and how they go about their businesses, I think it's incredible.
So why is it acceptable for Ferrari to say, if you want a Purosangue, you can have one, but you've got to sign a contract saying you're going to only sell it back to us for the first 18 months. And for Porsche to give somebody a hard time about what they did with their Turbo S, what's the difference?
Because Ferrari, it's controlled by the manufacturer and not controlled by the dealers. Porsche is controlled by the dealers and not the manufacturer. So the manufacturer, with the GT products and the stuff that they don't want flipped, I'm not talking about the Macans and the Cayennes, and they don't care about them. And even normal 911s and stuff. I'm talking about the stuff they don't want to go on the market. There needs to be a department like Ferrari. The difference between Ferrari and Porsche as well is that Ferrari only make maximum of 10,000 cars a year. Porsche probably make 300,000 cars a year. So it's the goal. I mean, they're real mass producer Porsche now, you know. So it's probably very hard for them to control. But if they want to do something about it, they need to create a department to control it, because Ferrari control it. Control the market. I'll give you another scenario as well. Ferrari dealers are not allowed to advertise cars while they're still being built at overlist. They're not allowed to advertise on the market. And if you do, you get told off, as in take that car down. So about 3-4 weeks ago, there were 20 296s online. Probably 10 at Ferrari dealers, all advertised at overlist, as in, or their list or whatever. They've all been taken down.
Really?
Yeah, because Ferrari have said, the cars ain't all sold, yeah, no chance. Yeah. Ferrari have said to the dealers, take the cars down. They're taken down. It's the power of this.
So the issue is it because of the randomness of Porsche, or like the non, as in like it's all so different? Like
it's the control.
So because at Ferrari, it's a blanket thing of wherever you are buying a Purosangue in the world, you cannot sell it for 18 months, doesn't matter. Whereas in Porsche, every dealer plays it a bit differently. And is that what the issue is? It's the
dealers, yeah. In Porsche, the dealers are given the allocation and they decide where the cars go. Whereas Ferrari, the Purosangue, the dealers will have given Ferrari a list of people that want the cars, and if Ferrari don't want you to have a car, you're not having one.
Yeah,
it's as simple as that.
Ferrari get to choose.
Yeah,
it's an interesting one, because I like you, sort of hear the stories of Ferrari, and often I don't hear as many complaints. It sort of seems to be with Ferrari, it's like, oh, of course, sir, you can have a Pista, but you must buy this Lusso and this Cali T as well. And if you do so, then you get a Pista.
Correct.
Where with Porsche, it's, well, new GT3 is coming. And if you get that Macan, well, it could help towards your GT3 allocation. Yeah. You get the Macan, then you never get the GT3. Yeah. So it seems to be more straight up with Ferrari. Yeah. This is what you have to do. If you do it, then you're going to get the car. We're not going to backtrack on it. We're not going to change it. That's the, yeah. And sometimes the criteria is insane. Sometimes you have to buy these three cars. Just to get this. But that's that. They're just being upfront about it.
Yeah, yeah.
So I don't know what, maybe we're biased. I don't know, but there's just something which is a bit different. And maybe it's because it's Ferrari and what they represent and they've always been this way. Maybe with Porsche, it's a new thing. Is it a new thing over the last 5 or 10 years for Porsche to be more so punchy?
They've become more popular, so they've become more arrogant, obviously, because they're one of the most profitable brands in the world, and it's just more of a popular brand now. So, you know, it becomes more of a subject to talk about. I'll tell you another thing with Ferrari as well. With the SF90, there was millions of them advertised, weren't there?
Yeah, fair.
There ain't none now. Mm. You know why? Because Ferrari have said the special car's coming, the Pista, or the special, whatever it's called. You have to have an SF90 to get one of them. And you have to have had an SF90. So all the ones that are on sale at return, they've all come off the market. So everyone wants a special car. So what happens then when they come off the market? They then strengthen up. Prices strengthen up because there ain't none.
There's no challenge for Dalies on the market either. FYI.
FYI. Who cares?
Well, you know, it's such a tough one because I think, you know, that Pura Sangwe, I really did like it and I really was impressed by it. Is it a Ferrari that I absolutely dream of owning? Is there a price where I would have been more excited by it? Even if it was 250 grand, I still
can't be 250 grand. An Urus is 250 grand.
But you know what I'm saying? Like, even if it was, I'm not certain that it's the first Ferrari I'm buying. Like, I do like it. Like, I do, I was really impressed by it. And I've said this before, I think, on the show, like, I find more and more that I love old Ferraris and new Porsches. And it was just really good and really impressive. It did lack a bit of emotion. It was an interesting day. And I have to say, up until the lunch stop, cruising around in it, I was like, cool, got massage seats in a Ferrari. Like, it's really quiet, which they've done on purpose, because it's supposed to be a refined experience. They didn't want it too loud in the back. And the suspension is really nicely soft, so you're like, oh, it's lovely, everything's dialed down. And then I took it from the lunch stop and I did the quick driving up and down the pass. And at that point, I was like, oh, wow.
There's a Ferrari.
There's a Ferrari in
here.
But when you're not doing that, I was just a bit like, meh, like, yeah, cool, like, sure. And to be fair, I was a bit like that with the 296 until I drove the 296 GTS and had a proper go. And I was like, okay, now it's amazing. So maybe it's this new age Ferrari that they're dialing down the feeling and the emotion a little bit, sort of at lower speeds.
Well, it's not just that, mate. They're trying to make a car for everyone, which is obviously what these manufacturers do nowadays. You know, they don't make a specific now. They make it for everyone.
Sure.
So, you know, and Ferrari, you know, as niche as it is still for everyone. Mm. You know, if your dream is to own a Ferrari, yeah, it will cost you a few quid, but you can have one.
Yeah.
You know, anyone can have one. So, like you said, there's a path of what you have to do. And actually, you don't even have to do that if you don't want to. If you don't want to play the game, don't play the game and just go and give the overs for one, because actually, sometimes that is cheaper.
Well, what do we think the overs will be for a Pura Sangwe? Surely the first few cars are going up for a mil.
No.
Surely.
No.
If we know what we know, which is you will not be able to buy a new V12, because that is the fact. So
no,
if you are desperate for it, surely, mate.
No. I think we will see 200 over.
600 odd.
Between 5 and 6, I think. Probably 200 over because of this 18-month thing where it's got to go back to the network. And then don't forget, like, the Ferrari dealers, they'll be selling them off, that won't even be advertised. As in, what I mean is they'll be changing hands without us even knowing.
Yeah, of course. Well, they'll call up the people who couldn't get one from the factory, say, we've got one, but
correct.
One's become available.
That's exactly what's happened. Do you want this car now? Yeah.
I'm just interested to find out what customers are going to think, because obviously I was with Tim, who's got one coming.
Yeah.
He was very happy, very excited. I actually haven't watched his video embarrassing, I haven't had time, but with me in the car, he said he was very happy. So sorry, Tim, if I've outed you there. Andrea Alexander's, he's got one coming.
Yeah,
he's super excited because he's like, he was obsessed with the Lusso.
He loves SUV type, big size cars.
And the Lusso is one of his favorite ever. So I said, perfect. I said, it's a Lusso with two extra doors and even more ability.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I'll be very interested, because you're right, there will be a lot of people getting out of there. Urus's, DBX's, Range Rovers and things like that to go and jump in one. So it's going to be fascinating. But yeah, I'm grateful for the experience. And I just, in my mind, I will still beat the drum for it not being an SUV and actually being a very fast A6 all-road.
I also think it's a bit of a willy-waving car as well.
Yeah, for sure.
Because it what it does, even if you haven't got a collection of Ferraris, if you've got one of them, a lot of people will assume you have.
Yeah, I'll assume you've got loads. You're going to have loads of stuff.
No.
You're going to have loads of cars just to be able to, you know, it's going to suggest that you are doing very well for yourself.
Yeah.
And, but, you know, but that is, you know, say Ferrari controlling it. You know, they want it to be seen in the right hands, in the right places.
Yeah.
They want it to remain super intriguing. I mean, we spoke about it before we started recording. The interest and intrigue in that car has been insane. The views of all the videos that launched, the numbers on some of the articles, it's just flown. People are fascinated by it. So you rock up to any event, people are going to go, oh my God, look, it's one of those Pura Sangwe things.
But that's Ferrari marketing, mate. They're unbelievable. They're brilliant.
Kevin in the live chat says $1 million sounds over the top at first, but considering the ludicrous car market the past few years, it might as well sell for that kind of money. Or it might well sell for that kind of money. I mean, we're going to have to wait and see. You know, there have been crazier overs for less hyped cars in recent years. So let's see when the first one comes on the market. But I do think we might see one getting close to at least the £900,000 mark, which is insane. But we're going to wrap things up. That is this week's episode. Let us know your thoughts below. Has our conversation changed your mind about the Pura Sangue? Have any of the other reviews changed your mind about it? Or do you still think it's a bit pointless? The one thing which I said we would discuss, which we haven't, is that stupid Mazda comparison. Oh, I can't be dealing with it, mate.
No.
There was an amazing article that Jonathan Schlafen, oh my God, I have a complete, absolute mind blank.
I had so many DMs. When I shared your story about at the weekend, I had so many DMs saying it's basically a Mazda.
Yeah, but that's what all the comments were like, oh, it's a Mazda, it's a Mazda, it's a Mazda. Which, like, it's like, cool.
Yeah.
Like, cool. Yeah. Okay. Heisnabiety. Sorry. Yeah, Jonathan writes a Heisnabiety. And he shared an article which was like, it's like that generic car guy who doesn't know the difference between a Polo and a Golf and sees the picture and goes, yeah, same car, bro.
Yeah.
It's like, come on.
Yeah, come on.
Anyway, that's us getting.
And actually, I couldn't give a toss about the Pura thing.
Really?
No, because I don't want one.
It's too much money.
It's too much money for me, for what it is. Not too much money. I can have one if I want one, but I don't want one.
Yeah.
I'd rather spend $400,000 on four cars. I'd rather spend $400,000 on a proper supercar and a Range Rover.
Yeah.
Or anything. take your pick.
Well, yeah.
Do you have any supercar and proper SUV? A state car?
Yeah, I mean, the RS6 wasn't it for me, but I would get a Panamera Turbo SE Hybrid or whatever and a Pista. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like,
I love the RS6, mate.
I know you do.
I drive it all the while now.
I know you do.
Mind you, my new Defender commercial's coming next week.
Oh, hello. That's exciting.
Yeah.
I'm back into Defenders again.
I'm selling me van. That little van that I mean, you cannot make this up. Bought that van. We bought two of them.
Yeah.
It's over a year old. Done 20,000 miles. Going to earn money on it.
That's insane.
It's gone up.
That's insane.
And it's unbelievable.
Let's start flipping vans. That's a whole side business. Alongside our 918 raffle competition. More on that soon.
Really?
Join us for our live recording session next week where you can get into the live chat. Like Brandon, who's saying the Urus looks like an Aztec. yes,
a bit rude.
Of course. And also you'll be listening to our latest episode of After Chicken Flag that Paul and I going to be recording after he gets back from his trip to Saudi Arabia. If you want to follow Tony in the meantime, he's at Tony Gravelled Car Sales on most social media platforms. I'm at Seen Through Glass on most social media platforms. And yes, we'll be back with you for another episode next week. Bye-bye.
See ya.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.